This is the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today is Chandler Gould. Chandler is the CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers, set to join us in a moment. First off, Kurt Blades, Association of Equipment Manufacturers, on sales this year.
Overall, the first three quarters of 2023 have been really good for equipment manufacturers, and those are reflected in the Tractor and Combine Report. Puts out the Tractor and Combine Report every month. We've been doing so for the last 35 years or so, where we show the sales of tractors and combines of various classes. And for the month of September, or really showing the first three quarters of the year, we're showing that some of those key markets, like self-propelled combines, articulated four-wheel drive tractors, and those tractors over 100 horsepower, are all showing pretty significant growth year over year.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Chandler Gould. Chandler is CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers. Chandler, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you for the opportunity to be on your show and to visit with you again today.
Okay, Chandler, you're actually on the road. You're not in D.C. today. You're at a fall annual event in Ohio?
I am. We are at the NOG U.S. Wheat Fall Board Meeting here in Cincinnati, Ohio, and kicked off our meeting yesterday with a tour of the Seymour flour mill, which was, of course, very interesting to see where our product goes once it leaves our farms. And today we're sitting down and going to start discussing policy.
And when we talk about policy, two different organizations, but really there's a lot of work that goes kind of hand in hand. Is that a good way to say it?
Most definitely. You know, NOG is very much on domestic policy, making sure that our farmers have got everything they need for risk management. As we know, there's so many variables in farming. And then, of course, the U.S. Wheat Associate is the trade arm of the wheat industry. And so we meet together twice a year to not only discuss trade and other issues facing the entire industry, but then, of course, we each go back to our respective corners, and we go to the Capitol Hill, and the U.S. Wheat goes to foreign countries to help continue to build out those foreign markets, and we make sure that they've got enough wheat to do so.
And that's a good place to talk about. We're wrapping up 23, heading into 24, and it's interesting when we talk about wheat because you never really have an end or a start to the season. It's kind of continuous, isn't it?
I mean, it's a little bit like dairy and a little bit like postal. You're exactly right. We've got winter and spring wheat, and we've got wheat in the ground year-round somewhere in the United States, unlike most other commodities.
Okay, and before I've got a couple of things I want to ask you about, but before we jump into that, what are we thinking as far as the 24 season? Is there some optimism? Is there concern among producers?
You know, I think overall, coming out of the several years of drought, there's definitely been some concern about just moving forward and making sure that we've got the appropriate risk management tools in place. Of course, we continue to work on the Farm Bill reauthorization. As you know, it expired on September 30th of this year. And really looking at how do we increase the Farm Bill so that the safety net is actually keeping up with cost of production. And when you look at when the bill was last reauthorized, from 2018 to 2023, cost of production has skyrocketed for multiple reasons. And we need to make sure that we have the best risk management tools and leverages in that bill so that our producers, have some certainty going forward. And we continue to work with both the House and Senate Agriculture Committees to get that bill fully reauthorized and updated for another 4 to 5 year term.
Glad you mentioned the Farm Bill, because at this point, we've got a lot of other things going on that are on front burner issues, if you will, for Congress. Where does Farm Bill fit into that?
Well, you know, it kind of changes a little bit every day. Once we finally got a Speaker of the House, which that was a major delay, not just on the Farm Bill, but on all legislation. I mean, the main thing facing Congress right now is funding the government. The stopgap funding runs out on November 17th, and so if the House and the Senate can't come to some sort of resolution on how to fund the government, then we're going to see a shutdown, which is going to significantly delay any legislation, but especially for us in the farming community and the wheat growers, the farm bill. And so until the Congress can figure out how to fund itself for a longer term, I'm a little worried that the farm bill is going to continue to be pushed. We already know it's going to be pushed into next year. The question is, how far? Are we talking March, May, and then you get into the election cycle. So there's just a lot of variables floating around. But if we can't, first we've got to fund the government so we can truly focus on passing the farm bill.
And for wheat growers, you mentioned dairy earlier. Those are two commodities that really need to know what the rules of the game are, what the map looks like as you go into 24. Is that a good assessment as well?
It is. You know, a lot of people think, you know, oh my gosh, the farm bill expired September 30th and that the programs aren't going to work anymore. And that's really not the case because of the way they're written. Now, that said, you can go pretty much from September 30th to December 31st with an expired farm bill, and everybody, including wheat and dairy, can continue along with certainty and knowing what's going on. But come January 1, you're going to start to see programs that aren't authorized or funded because the farm bill hasn't been passed. That's when you're going to start seeing some major problems in rollout and delivery of whatever program was put in the 18 farm bill. So we are definitely looking at an extension. Both the Senate and House Agriculture Committees know they have to extend the farm bill. I think there's a little bit of a debate. The Senate is asking for at least a full year extension, and the House is saying they need an extension, but they haven't really put a definite time on how long they want that extension to be to give the new speaker an opportunity to try to push a farm bill through, saying, as you may remember, Speaker Johnson said he wants to get a farm bill done by December, but I'm afraid funding the government is going to take up all of his legislative days between now and the end of December.
Now, actually growing the crop, we experienced some challenges as well. You mentioned drought earlier. We have tools that are available in the actually growing in the field, and some of those have really been the target of others. I'm talking now about California's Prop 65 and glyphosate. What's happening there?
Well, we had a huge win yesterday, not only for the U.S. wheat grower, but really for all commodities in agriculture. NOG has been the lead plaintiff against the state of California in regards to their Prop 65, which was going to require any product that had glyphosate applied to it to put a very misleading and false warning label on the food products or other end uses, wherever they may go. And NOG, along with a coalition, sued the state of California over the fact that we know glyphosate is safe. There has been numerous EPA, HHS, Institute of Health, the EU, which we know is so strict on so many of the crop protection chemicals, have all tested and said glyphosate is safe. And Prop 65 was going to force a misleading and false label on there. A permanent injunction was granted by the Ninth Circuit yesterday saying that California cannot require that warning label to be put on there because there was no scientific data that backed their claims. And so we have been fighting this for 6 years. This is an excellent win for us. It's an excellent precedent for agriculture. And we're just thrilled that the court actually made a science-based decision and not just on emotion.
Yeah, you hit all of the points that I thought. I had a follow-up question there because EPA has already come out and said it's safe, yet we still have those, whether they're lawyers looking for some big suit or whether it's government. So moving forward, this is good for all of ag. What other things are we watching? I know only about a minute left here, but what other things are we watching that we need to see wins on as well?
Well, we actually just need to see, you know, the EPA to make sure that through FIFRA, you know, if the EPA says a product is safe and it has gone through the registration process, then there is state preemption, and we cannot go around and have 50 states come back and add additional labeling or saying that, you know, they want X, Y, and Z to be done. to a commodity or for a commodity before it can get entered their state. And California is by far the worst. And it's not just crop protection. I mean, look what they did to eggs and what they're doing to pork. Between the Interstate Commerce Clause and preemption of the federal government, California seems to think they're their own country out there, and they want to dictate to the rest of the country how we are going to produce food to feed everybody. And this is just a huge win for us, showing that our EPA and our regulatory agencies have said this product is safe, and therefore it is safe in all 50 states and to move forward. And we're hoping this will set a precedent, not only for commodities, but also on the livestock side, as things continue to, I would say, degrade in California, but this is still a huge win for us here at NOG and the U.S. Wheat Growers, and we look forward to continuing with our coalition on this and other issues facing our growers.
Chandler Gould is CEO of the National Association of Wheat Growers, online at wheatworld.org. And this is the Agribusiness Report.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at deltapine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Roger McCohen is a law professor at Washburn University, talks about a challenge associated with buying farmland that has a crop growing on it.
Well, it's an important issue from a tax standpoint for several reasons, one of which is if I'm buying land with a growing crop on it, I can't take any allocated deduction for that crop. In other words, when we buy farmland, what we like to do from a tax standpoint is we allocate value to the different items of property that we're acquiring it. So fences, irrigation equipment, whatever it might be, and we set that up and depreciate it. Well, I can't get any deduction for a growing crop, so there's no separate allocation for that value. And I would say the IRS has not been clear on the issue with respect to a growing crop. But what I think you do is you capitalize the crop into the land itself, and then you get a deduction when the income from the crop is reported or fed to livestock. And that could be in a different tax year than the year in which the crop is actually sold. So it depends on whether there's a deferred payment contract that's involved or not, and becomes a timing issue for clients. One thing is maybe to lease the ground before you buy it. If you know you're going to buy it, maybe you can structure an arrangement with the seller that you could lease the ground. Therefore, you get the deduction for the input costs associated with that crop on the ground that you're buying. And so therefore, if you buy it during that term, you're the farmer. You have been the farmer all along. You get to claim the deduction. But that requires some pre-planning. Talk with their tax advisor. And hopefully the tax advisor is aware of these things and can help them structure those arrangements or at least suggest what you should do to get the best tax advantage for your position on your return before you actually buy the land.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Join us at the Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show, November 28th through 30th at the Amarillo Civic Center. Connect with hundreds of exhibitors showcasing the latest ag technology and attend agriculture-focused seminars, too. Earn your certification at the Beef Quality Assurance Training or attend livestock education sessions with the Texas Tech School of Veterinary Medicine. Hear from experts at the Cotton Conference, earn CEU credits, or attend the Texas Wheat Symposium. It's all happening at the Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show. Visit AmarilloFarmShow.com for more information.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Chandler Gould with the National Association of Wheat Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
At the 96th Annual National FFA Convention, the renewal of an agreement between the organization and the Agriculture Department.
This MOU is a reflection of a true partnership where we work in concert to ensure that young people have extraordinary opportunities.
We eagerly anticipate the vibrant future of our partnership will carve out in not just growing that next generation of leaders who will change the world, but through USDA and many other places across this nation, putting that talent to work to ensure a vibrant future for the industry that we both love so much.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack and National FFA CEO Scott Stubb at the convention signing the Memorandum of Understanding renewing the five-year relationship between both entities.
This MOU is essential as it paves the way for the continued evolution of the agriculture industry and empowers today's youth to meet the demands of the agriculture pipeline.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.